Namaste everyone. Welcome to the Charvak podcast. This is your host Kushal Mehra. All right. Today we're going to be talking about another book. It's called Bharat Rising, Dharma, Democracy and Diplomacy. And to talk about it, I have the author of the book with me, Utpal Kumar. Utpal, welcome. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. Thank you, Kushal. I'm a huge fan of your work. So yeah, it's honor to be here.
Thank you very much. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, your background, and maybe we can start over there.
I've been a journalist for the last more than two decades. I've been working in Delhi with most print media. I've been basically a print journalist. So I started my career around 2003-04 with Pioneer, and then worked in his Sun Times. Then I again came back to Pioneer and headed their features section called The Agenda. And then I was a features Sunday editor with Mail Today, which is part of India Today Group. And then I was with NewsX for a while, and now I'm here in First Post NewsX.
So in your journey in the last so many years, do you think print journalism has changed at a fundamental level, or do you find any changes because you've been involved for such a long time, or still at its core print? Because I'll tell you why I'm asking this. I'll explain this. I'll caveat this. It's like I believe television journalism, with exceptions, is not journalism. It's more infotainment. While the real news comes from print. And I'm not just saying print in a digital form or in an actual newspaper form. So when I say print, it could be actually a website, it could be a hard newspaper or something of that sort. But basically, that's where we get the news. What has come down in from what we call the 8 o'clock slot to the 11 o'clock slot on national television, that's not journalism. Yeah, before that is journalism, where we have reports happening or breaking news happening. That is journalism. But what is understood, primetime debates is not journalism, right? And it bothers me that all journalists are bracketed in the same manner. I take offense to that. And I'm not even a journalist, and I take offense to that. It's just it hurts my sensibilities as a rationalist to actually look at this. Yeah. I was like, listen, you're an anchor, you're not a journalist. Call an anchor, a journalist, yeah. A journalist. Like a Shiv Arur, he's a journalist. He does journalism. When Shiv is on India Today, he's doing journalism. Yeah, and an anchor is doing anchor ka job.
Because he allows others to talk. Unfortunately, I think you're spot on that, you know. That's the unfortunate part, you know. But print journalism definitely also changed. One change I can say, you know, I'll largely focus on the positive point, that it's not a close club right now. Like, you know, जो हमें सुनने को मिलता है कि वो प्रेस फ्रीडम खतरे में है, कम हो रही है. एक्चुअली इन लास्ट 21 इयर्स ऑफ माय प्रोफेशन, आई बिलीव दैट प्रेस फ्रीडम हैज एक्चुअली इंक्रीज्ड. देयर आर मोर वैरायटी इन द काइंड ऑफ यू नो आर्टिकल्स बीइंग पब्लिश. देयर आर न्यू पीपल अलाउड टू बी यू नो दे गेट चांस टू राइट. इट वाज नॉट द केस अर्लियर. यू नो ऑल दिस पीपल यू नो सो कॉल्ड एलिट्स हु टुडे कंप्लेन अबाउट यू नो दिस प्रेस फ्रीडम. They had kind of, you know, completely gagged up the media. It was run by a few people where only certain kind of opinion will go. Today is better than that. Quality, I'd say that, yeah, I mean, we could have done better, any opinion. But I believe that the state of media is still not run very professionally. And that is the problem, you know. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, like, you have to make it worth. And print media is still lagging, most of them. I'm not talking about Times of India. But most of them, you know, they don't pay well. So they don't get good quality, you know, people working for that, you know. So that's a problem. But I still believe that, you know, print media per se is in some ways dying profession in some way. Like I started from print. Today I'm in digital. Tomorrow maybe I may try to be, you know, like a podcast. So things are changing. Nature of print is changing. But the flip side is that, the good side is that, there are more variety, there is more diversity in opinion. There are people like me also writing. There are people who were previously the left-wingers or so-called secular people. They're still there. They're still controlling most of the media. Mind you, it's 10 years down the line of Modi government. They're still up in some time. And I shouldn't be naming, but I'm saying that most of this, so they're still controlled by them. But things have improved on that front for sure.
So from a writing perspective, so as we are talking about your book, so as a from a stylistic perspective, like what are the key differences, let's say, when you're writing an article vis-a-vis when you're writing a book? Like what differences does one need to keep in mind from a style perspective?
I should tell you, it's very difficult for a journalist to write a book mostly because journalists always get a very short burst of energy. तो वो आर्टिकल लिखने के लिए वो ठीक ठाक है, लाइक यू नो एक दिन सुबह उठे और 2 घंटे में लिख दिया. बट बुक राइटिंग इज अ डिफरेंट यू नो बॉल गेम. यू हैव टू फोकस फॉर फॉर 6 8 months एटलीस्ट फॉर दैट. एंड दैट्स वेयर यू नो आई फाइंड मोस्ट ऑफ माय जर्नलिस्ट फ्रेंड्स, सम ऑफ द वेरी सीनियर एडिटर्स, दे फाइंड वेरी डिफिकल्ट टू राइट बुक्स. यू नो देयर आई मोस्ट ऑफ माय पब्लिशिंग फ्रेंड्स कंप्लेन दैट यार ये एडिटर ने भी 2 साल लगा दिया यार, अभी दिया नहीं. एंड प्रॉब्लम इज दैट यू नो जर्नलिस्ट फोकस समटाइम्स, एंड आई एम नॉट टॉकिंग अबाउट ऑल पीपल, देयर आर पीपल लाइक यू नो अरुण सॉरी यू नो टू टर्न आउट बुक एवरी नाउ एंड, बट मोस्ट ऑफ जर्नलिस्ट दे हैव वेरी शॉर्ट स्पॉट ऑफ एनर्जी. यू नो दे आर वेरी गुड विथ राइटिंग आर्टिकल्स, बट यू गिव देम टेल देम टू राइट 50,000 वर्ड यू नो बुक, देन दे फाउंड
So, as far as this book is concerned, why did you decide to write this? Like, what was the ideation behind it? Like, what did you feel that you were like, nahi, iske upar likhna hai kind of a situation?
Largely, you know, one is there that every journalist wants to write a book, and so I mujhe bhi kira tha ki I should write a book, and for last almost like 50 I was thinking that I should write a book. So that is there. That apart, you know, the real reason is last 10 years I've seen that there has been a huge gap into the reality and how things have been projected about this country, largely, especially by you know mainstream led Western media. So उनके हिसाब से तो वो यहाँ लोकतंत्र खतरे में है भाई, यानी हम तो मुसलमानों को तो मार के भगाने वाले हैं, या फिर प्रेस फ्रीडम नहीं है. बट वेन यू एक्चुअली गो एंड सी इट, यू नो यू ऑल्सो यूर्सेल्फ यू नो मीट सो मेनी पीपल, द रियलिटी इज एब्सोल्युटली डिफरेंट. यू नो कंट्री हैज नेवर यू नो लिबरल इन सम वे. इन मीडिया आई कैन से अबाउट वेरी दिस थिंग दैट यू नो वी आर फार मोर डाइवर्स एंड वी आर लाइक फार मोर डिफरेंट व्यूज टू अपीयर ऑन न्यूज पेपर. Same is the case with you know with Bharat per se across the country. You know there's a lot of optimism about this country. And if you leave apart some you know exceptional you know one or two cases here and there which happen in the world, everyone is largely safe. Definitely minorities are safe in this country. But then yeah, but then I realized that this so-called you know, strong Modi government is largely reactive rather than you know proactive in counting the narrative war. So I thought, you know, I should write in my own little way to correct that anomaly about that, and to project the thing that is the Bharat rising. You know that Hindu assertion per se is not a negative phenomenon. It's actually India, which is a democratic country, is precisely because it's Bharat. You cut out the Bharat element, Sanatan element from this, and you will get Bangladesh or you will get Pakistan. It's plain. So I wanted to put that thing forward. Also, what I did is, you know, there is a huge, you know, big pastime on this, our so-called, you know, left illiberal gang. They will immediately, you know, switch back to Nehruvian era and say, oh, samay itna acha tha, ab dekho kharab hai. So I also brought Nehruvian rule between 1947 to 64. And on basic fundamental issues, I compared that era with Modi's era. And when the results were struck, you know, that era came out to be actually quite what actually the we have been told. That far, you know, Nehruvian era has been illiberal in many ways. It has been some of his you know, opinion of Nehru about press was boring, to say the least. And he was the one who introduced first amendment. What he did with you know he got Hindu code bill, but his stand on about Muslim were absolutely you know about he wanted to keep them in ghettos for that matter. So and also you know like more than 3 dozen books, I'm told it's more than that, books he banned in 17 years of his rule. I don't remember a single book being banned in the last 10 years. So when I compare that two, I found that, you know, there is a huge discrepancy, huge gap between the reality and the projection. So my book was an attempt to just correct that.
So let's discuss a little bit more, because I think this is chapter 6 of your book, right? On the Nehru, what do you call that? Three Musketeers or something, right? Of the Nehruvian era or something.
Nehruvian tyranny. Yeah.
So
basically, now, on Three Musketeers, I talked about
Go ahead.
So on the Three Musketeers, I talked about Bastian Ghosh. And then I'm taking the example of B.R. Ambedkar, who is vastly misunderstood in this country. And then Veer Savarkar. And you know how these three people were the victims of tyranny. I realized that there were many others. I just chose three, but these three were from the totally different background, totally different ideological body. So just to create that, you know, semblance of diversity. So yeah, and they all three were victimized, all three were pushed to the corners in their own way, in the name of, you know, Nehruvian way of life, as they call it, or governance.
But then, I don't know, I think somewhere down the line, I would never vote for Nehru, I've never hidden that fact, but I guess, like, how does one look at Nehru? At the end of the day, he was a prime minister of India, our country. He was also a part of the freedom struggle for our country. And like, how does one try to be balanced with Nehru? Like, everything in today's world is so polarized and so tribal that one cannot even have a discussion around Nehru in a positive light, you know, in a mildly positive light. I would even say not even positive, mildly positive light. But at the end of the day, whether it's Gandhi, whether it's Nehru, everything is so polarized these days. Like, how does one even frame a discussion then?
See, I think we have to be honest about it. We have to see him as a product of his time. Nehru, and I'm not one person who says that Nehru hated this country or no, desh ko bechna chahta tha. And I'm absolutely clear about that. He loved this country. But his ideas were absolutely wrong. Most of them. That's the unfortunate part about it. And when I say it was a product of time, you know, that was the era when socialism, communism was in a flavor of the era. Everyone thought that, you know, it is a good. Mao's tyranny and a terror came out in the public much later. And it was seen as a very positive force. Same was the case with Stalin. So it took time, you know. It took time. In fact, in our country, most of the people who today, earlier I want to talk about, who became the right wingers in academia, in journalism, they all started as activists, left-wing intellectuals. So I don't blame on that part. The problem with Nehru was that Nehru was convinced that he's right. He was right. That was the problem. He was not ready to think that, okay, he may be wrong. He in track. He never did that. And also he carried the guilt. Guilt of, you know, what, you know, I remember the book, reading the book of Sitaram Goyalji, Why I'm Hindu. And he also says the same point. He says that, you know, that you get a class of people who actually behave like their previous oppressors. So this was the class of people Nehru belonged to. He actually behaved like the British state. He openly said also, I'm last Englishman in this country. And his behavior with fellow beings were exactly the same way how British would behave Indians. And here I'm talking to Hindus. And I remember this example, you know, Sitaram Goyalji mentioned in his book, where, you know, there was huge movement against cow protection in this country. And a lot of sadhus, and they were protesting in front of us. And one gentleman from US, who was a friend of Sitaram Goyalji, he came to India. And he was covering that thing. Oh, he was photographing and all these things. And he saw and he was aghast. Seriously, Nehru comes. And Chipsyam ki bahan, Vijayalakshmi Pandit. And the moment sadhu see Nehru coming, Nehru had an aura. See, we are people, you know, we believe in goodness of people. सेंटलीनेस और वो गांधी से एसोसिएटेड थे तो सॉन्ग को थोड़ा और एडवांटेज मिला था. सो दिस साधु कपल ऑफ देम रन्स टुवर्ड्स हिम, हाथ जोड़ते हुए दे रन टुवर्ड्स हिम एंड दिस गाय डजंट इवन टॉक, जस्ट स्लैप्स हिम राइट लेफ्ट एंड सेंटर. तो ये साधु कहानी है खत्म नहीं होती, उनकी बहन आती है और वो भी दो चार और लगा देती है. And this guy was aghast, you know, and when this guy meets Shrikant Goyal ji, he says ki yaar income aisa hota to uski naukri chali jati. Later, you know, Sitaram Goyal says that Nehru ka jo this attitude of Nehru was confined only with Hindus. He would be very differential towards Muslim and utterly differential towards British and other people. And that's why he says, you know, this actually, you know, he took on this attitude from that ruling class of people. Who tried to, you know, completely follow the British way of life, where, you know, you can beat Hindu and get away with this. You have to be tolerant and very nice to Muslims because they can fight back, presumably. And with British, of course, they're the ruling class. So Nehru had this kind of, you know, this thing, the dichotomy. But largely, you know, and this is where the problem started. Tricky problem. I wrote about that about my book. I don't blame Nehru for taking JNK to UNSC. My personal feeling is that India would have been forced by any chance. India was not a big power. US and they were pushed India. Where Nehru made the mistake, and that was the mistake of his eagerness to be in power, and also his loyalty towards the British system. He continued the same old bureaucracy, same old British system, even after getting independence. So, what happened when कबीलाओं ने पाकिस्तानी फोर्स जो कश्मीर पे अटैक किया, अटैक नेहरू एक्चुअली वांटेड इंडियन फोर्सेस टेक बैक द पीओके. इंडियन आर्मी वाज लेड बाय ब्रिटिश जनरल हु वाज इन कांस्टेंट टच विद पाकिस्तानी आर्मी हु वाज आल्सो लेड बाय ब्रिटिश जनरल. सो इट वाज अ फिक्स्ड गेम. सो दीज टू जनरल्स हु डिसाइडेड कि कहां हमें रुकना है, कहां से हमें रुकना है, किससे आगे नहीं जाना. एंड दिस गाय कुड डू नथिंग. Similarly, the case with, you know, why to get Lord Mountbatten as a voice of the independent country. So this guy, mistake was that, you know, he could not come through that, you know, his British subservience. वहाँ फंसा हुआ था. और उसकी ideology first, like you see his foreign policy, and where I find it completely different, you know, after him, it is actually Modi's foreign policy which is starkly different. Before that was ideology first. Ideology first as भैया नहीं, like, you know, that I said in my book also. Rasgupta Sahab in his memoir writes here that Kennedy wanted India to do the nuclear test first. They offered power and everything. They refused. And Kennedy's idea was just simple, that he wanted democracy in Asia to test the nuclear bomb before China does, communist China does. This guy refuses. So this is ideology first. This is not your nation first. You should have done it. कोई आपको help करना ले लो यार. Same with the case with UNSC seat. We refuse because, you know, पहले भाई को दो फिर हम लेंगे. And look what happened after that. So this is the problem with, you know, his entire focus was on ideology. He lived in his own. And in 1962 he paid for that. His dream came crashing.
Now I want to talk about a section of your book that I disagree with, and disagree with quite a bit. So this is chapter 5 of your book, right? Chapter 5 of your book, which you call Brahmins, Dalits, and the Curse of Whisperers, right? I'll tell you which bit I disagree with. I don't disagree with the bit where you narrate the atrocities. Those I don't disagree with. I'm opposed to Perrierism. I call Perrierism casteism. It's also casteism. Any form of discrimination based on a caste or a jati-based identity or a varna-based identity is casteism. Where I disagree with you is, I think, once again, the attack on the Chitpavan Brahmins post Gandhi's assassination by Godse the thug, and this is my version, Godse is a thug, nothing else, no hero. He was a thug. My views. I'm not saying these are your views. The Godse's murder of Gandhi pushed Hindutva as a movement back by at least 50 years, in my opinion. But that's what you expect from people of a certain intelligence, which Godse was. And again, my views, not yours. But the problem here is that I'm not saying you intended to say that, but sometimes it could come across, which is why I'm asking this question, that there are no doubt about Periyarism and its violent rhetoric against Brahmins. In fact, I had written a whole thread exposing Periyarism, how Periyarism is anti-science, anti-Brahmins, anti-every good thing in life. And there is actually a dedicated clip on my channel of like 8 minutes of me basically reading what Periyar stood for. And it was all against any decent liberal person would stand for. But the point is that one cannot forget to talk about what led to it and what happened before that. Every time what happens is everything that happens today, like I will not agree with one line, especially where you say Brahmins are the new untouchables, right? Like I think it was page 69 or something where you had written that if my memory serves me, like that is something I can't agree with, because I refuse to believe that they're untouchables. Like there is no government data that proves that. They're just not. That's my point of view. But I wanted to talk about that with you. So what made you
I agree with you. In fact, first I should tell you that, you know, I totally agree with what you said about but first I want to agree with what you said about Godse. Godse was absolutely, you know, I don't believe that he's a terrorist, but he did something which actually harmed Hindu cause immensely. You know, Gandhi was gone force by the time he was killed. And actually, you see in the book, Makran Pranjpe, Gandhi Afterlife, and where he hints about that. He doesn't say hints about the fact that governance at that time, Nehruvian administration, was indifferent towards this. Unke association ke darwaze bomb blast hua tha. Phir bhi the day the second attack happened by the same group of people. They were just 15 thullas with lathis. So you know what government also wanted. Government was completely tired of Gandhi. And my assumption is that hey, Gandhi served 5 more years. He would have led another struggle against Nehru government with the kind of policy Nehru was doing with all the statism and everything. So actually, it harmed Hindu cause. Hindu Mahasavas are gone forever. Hindus become very distinct, apologetic about what happened. About Brahmins, it was I think a bit tongue-in-cheek remark. But I agree with one thing that, you know, I don't know about other places, but and I'm not talking about the elite Brahmins. There are Brahmins who are doing well, who actually control. I mean, Nehruvian time also, most of the bureaucrats are Brahmins. I'm not that layer, topmost layer. Come out of that layer, and then layer which is the Brahmin layer, were poor. Most of the Brahmins are poor. In Noida, you come to Noida.
No disagreement there. No disagreement there.
So these Brahmins, when I say untouchables, see, they deserve as much support from the government, as much support from the society. But such has been the narrative that, you know, you can't help them. They can't be helped. And in fact, there is a tendency that, you know, it's better that no help with Dalit. But I'm not a person. I believe that, you know, these people are taken out. And actually, I believe historically, the so-called Dalits, they fought to save Hindu society more than anybody else. Historically, that data is there. But in that context, I said, you know, that there, such has become the political Mahal of this country. Brahmin can be killed and no one will say a point about that. Brahmin can be cursed and Brahminism can be compared with dengue and the person can get away. I imagine the person said the same thing about Dalits or Muslims. I'm sure it will be now. So on that context, I use the thing. But largely, I agree with what you wanted to say.
See, my what I fear the most is why I raised this issue is I wanted to give you the opportunity to clarify, because a lot of times what happens is the author writes with one intention, the reader reads with another intention, and one thing leads to the other, and the author never gets the opportunity to clarify to that reader where he's reading. I want to reiterate again and again, what's happening with the Brahmin community in Tamil Nadu is an abomination. And my way of looking at it is simple. I don't apologize for anything other than what I have done. I don't even apologize for anything that my parents have done. Forget what my ancestors did. Main kyun sorry bolu? Maine thoda na kiya. Main kyun sorry bolu? I am a firm believer in this mindset that I don't pay for anything else. I understand reservations as a system. I support SCST reservations. I oppose OBC reservations. I've been very consistent on my thoughts. I understand all these things. But at the end of the day, the discussion around this subject in India is... And by the way, I'm actually on board that I believe that certain sections of the SCST Atrocities Act are just insanely draconian. And I am with you on that also, that I believe that as a free speech person, if you believe in the concept of free speech, then hate speech has to be part of free speech. You cannot narrate hate speech because it's impossible to define what hate speech is. Like, I mean, I hate certain vegetables is also hate speech. Technically, what? How are we going to create grade? Oh, so you can hate vegetables and food. No, but you can't hate beef or you can't hate pork. Like, it is so stupid, right? Which is why which is why hate speech should not be, litigated. Which is why America doesn't litigate hate speech, no matter how much people try it over there. The courts are so clear in America. They're like, even hate speech is part of free speech. Yes, companies can take a... Say tomorrow, if I'm working in a company and I say something batshit crazy, like all Brahmins are bad or all Dalits are bad or all Muslims are bad, my employer is clearly under their own rights through their freedom to fire me, and I should be bearing. But I don't want the state coming after me. And India, all these acts are draconian. But this discussion, sometimes I feel in this, I could be wrong. It's okay. I'll change my view if somebody thinks I'm wrong and if they provide enough data for that. But I feel the data is so lopsided when it comes to even atrocities committed on groups. If we measure on the basis of atrocities committed on groups, first of all, even one atrocity committed on any group should be condemned. But the point is, if we are looking at through the group lens, then we have to accept statistical analysis from the group lens, don't you think? So in that case, I did not want people to misunderstand what you have written in chapter 5, which is why I purposely brought that up, what you had written on page 69.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wanted to add that. I'm glad you asked that. And that's very important. Well, there will be people who will just take that line and project it as, Brahminical project, which is not. Actually, I'm one person, as I said, I support your visions. And there are reasons for that right now. Because, we can't take away. But there are forces who will divide Hindu society just in that name. So for that sake also, and look what happens. Those people who talk about, mostly talk about Dalits, they are the one who hate Sanatan Dharma. They are the one who talked about, Dalit Muslim unity when they were non. In fact, that's why I have a huge admiration for what, Ambedkar does. Ambedkar always followed by what he saw. He may be wrong, but he always wanted to go with facts in front of him. And look what happened with, that other massacre in the book I talked about, Mari Japi. Mari Japi wouldn't have happened had their leader Jogen Mandal wouldn't have fallen for this imaginary Muslim Dalit bhai-bhai policy. And look, the entire community suffered, and they are still suffering. They are the real, they need CA more than anybody else. CA is for them. 70 years down the line.
In fact, can we talk about this a little more, that the biggest casteism that exists right now is actually those poor Dalits of Pakistan that are suffering under the casteist authoritarian regime that is the Pakistani state and the Pakistani society. I say this with full responsibility. Pakistani society, casual casteism is existing on all layers, no matter what they want to think. Oh, hum to ji zaat paat nahi karte, oh tum bhi karte ho, tumko pata bhi nahi hai tum karte ho. Matlab unko ye bhi nahi idea ki wo kar rahe hain. And in fact, let's talk about, because you brought up the CAA. Like,
Bilkul,
Bangladesh banta nahi. Ye bahut sahi baat boli. And I like that you bring in Deep Haldar's book also in that chapter. On untouchability, Brahmins and Dalits. You talk about Deep Haldar's book also, which is, by the way, an excellent book. And but on this issue on CA, because your book is two halves, right? First half is more our society and an internal dynamics, and the next half is diplomacy and all those things in that sense. But talking about from that the CA perspective, how the hell don't you think somewhere also we as a society and as a bunch of listen, you are a journalist, I'm a podcaster. Don't you think we have also failed to communicate as individuals? Like CAA should have been the first thing any decent human being should have supported. Here are communities that are actually being put under the pump. And do you think we have failed somewhere, or it's just that no matter what the what we do, these people are going to hate us?
No, you're right. We have failed. We as a society have failed. In fact, on many things, we kind of, you know, that's the problem with Hindu mindset right now. We want some other person to stand up and do things for us. Hum khud khade nahi hona chahte. Hum chahte hain. That's why we elected Modi. And second time we elected with more mandate. Third time, I'm sure this will be even bigger one. Because we believe, but we are not ready as a society to stand up on our own. And thodi safai khud kar le, thodi apne kaam khud kar le. We always want state to do. It's the same case will happen with Hindu temples, still under seeking the liberation. It's precisely because Hindu society is not woken up. They don't ask. Aap socho na, it's a democracy. Politicians wahi karenge, chahe jo bhi party ho. I don't have a high regard for most politicians. They will do what people will ask. Kal ko yadi half the India wakes up and says, we want Hindu temples to be liberated. Won't they do it? They will do happily. Problem is, we have not raised the issue. And same is the case with all the CAA issue. I believe, and I wrote also an article on that recently, it is our moral obligation to the people left behind. It's more than anything else. Our people, Gandhi, Nehru, and all these people went there and convinced these people, these Dalits, they were smart enough. Jo garib log the, unke paas to chote se land hai. They were convinced, we are there, we'll safeguard you. And later, they also, this Liaquat Nehru pact was also reformation that, okay, we are there to look after you. But today, when you know less than 2% of Hindu population is in Pakistan, and in Bangladesh, in fact, I have Deep Haldar's latest book on being Hindu in Bangladesh, a course. Professor, the Dhaka University professor, who say that Hindus in Bangladesh have just 3 decades. 3 dasak se bache hain wahan Hindu ko. They won't be Hindu. And in fact, I was talking this election jo ho rahe the wahan, Sheikh Hasina ki. I was talking to a couple of my friends who were covering, who went there. And they said ki Hindus of that country were looking at the election with deep sense of, you know, panic. Had Sheikh Hasina lost that election, there would have been mass exodus of Hindus. So this is the state of affairs. And we don't even wake up. We don't even care about. Most of people don't care about. That's a problem. Or they care about, but they don't really, you know, express it loudly. We need to express. Look how they express. And in some other commentary on Fridays or some other day, they come out and express themselves. Sometimes you have to express yourself. Sometimes, you know, the government can turn deep. You know, government can come maybe. Like I was told when I was very young, that, you know, my brother used to tell me that, you know, don't be under impression that police is there to protect you. He's somebody who wanted, you know, to keep some weapons at home. He said, police is not there to protect you. Police is there to maintain law and order. If your killing makes that happen, police will allow that to happen. Very strong word. I keep that in mind. Police is not there to protect me. Police is there to make law and order thing work. And if sacrifice of one person like me happens, they will allow it to happen for the larger cause. So, apna protection, apne haath, that Hindus have to realize. They somehow don't. And so that is the problem. Now, coming to even the larger issue about all the people, that CA against Muslims is bunkum. It's all politics. We all know that, you know, and no serious person will even argue that. But what is important is that when your state promises a section of Hindus that please don't come to India, be there, we are there to look after you. And if that doesn't happen, isn't it the responsibility of the state to fulfill that thing? It's as simple as that. Aap apne aap ko superpower bolte ho, which you bolte ho. Do it. Show it right now. And where will these people go? The easiest thing they can do right now, which I tell all the so-called higher caste Hindus, yeah, please stop discriminating so-called lower caste, because tomorrow they will convert and then aap usko bhai bulaoge, bhai kaise ho. It's better that aap pahle se hi bhai bana lo yaar. But that thing is coming up in the mind. I'm not saying that, you know, we have not improved. The society is waking up, but
definitely
it will die. I think.
But now I want to take the turn into part two of your book. Now, I love the title, by the way, of chapter 10, Pakistan and the Chimera of a Friendly Neighborhood. So now, my friend Sushant Sareen will be very proud of you. He'll be like, Dekha! Sushant will be like,
yes.
Like, Sahi baat kiya, Utpal. So let's focus on this. Now,
I am
a hawk on the Pakistan issue, but not as much of a hawk as Sushant Sareen maybe. But I am pretty much most of the time in and aligned with the Sushant Sareen view. But at the end of the day, we all know that, well, as they say, you cannot change your neighbor. So we can't change our neighbor. Pakistan is going to be our neighbor, whether we like it or not. Now, how do we deal with this? I know you talk about it in the chapter also. How do we look at the primary decision of how to deal with Pakistan should start with how do we look at Pakistan? So let's say if we assume your baseline, which is beautifully expressed in your title of the chapter itself, how do we take it further then? What are the probable solutions? Do you think this government is doing the right things or they could do better? What's your opinion?
I think it's a long haul. But with Pakistan, you know, it won't come in a day. It won't come in 10 years. Let's be prepared. Long, you know, not confrontation, but definitely standoff. See, Pakistan is like a bully. The more you give in, the more it will hit you. When you stand up, then it will say, okay, sir, so you can fight. Pakistan till 71 was under its own Lala land. You know, it thought that it actually believed in the Islamist supremacy. Ek Muslim das Hindu ke barabar hai, ya so Hindu ke barabar hai. 71 was that was the eye opener. I was going through the newspaper clipping of that era of Pakistani papers, and I was laughing. It was just funny the way they wrote. They were kind of taken up there, you know, this complete, you know, otherworldliness, where, you know, how can this Kafirs army defeat us? 93,000, how can they be captured? So from there, you know, so they always had this superiority, and they're still being taught that in the school, you know, in their schools, in their army, this thing. The army, the professionals who are being trained, they have been told that Kafirs are weak, Hindus are weak hearted, Hindus can run away. So they inculcate that value, they come up with that reality. So that's very difficult. See, but the moment, you know, someone comes out convinced that he can easily defeat and beat and get away with it, I think 90% of the people will do that. And so that's where the thing is, Pakistan problem is there. What was our mistake was that, you know, where I know I kind of totally agree with Sushant Sareen. You know, Sushant Sareen, I remember reading him long back, and I have kind of, you know, I'm kind of inspired by his writing in some way in on Pakistan. You don't need to always talk for diplomacy. Sometimes not talking best form of diplomacy. And look what happened, you know, when we were talking to Pakistan, the most serious discussion was happening between 2000 and 2008. That was the time of Vajpayee and Manmohan Singh. And you remember most of the bomb blasts happened across the country. So if talking leads to bomb blasts, is better, you know, we are better off without talking. Second thing is, you know, we have till now, last 70 years, talked on a different, wrong topic. Modi government, some quarter has started at least making some sense there that it's not on Kashmir we have to talk. Baat karni hai, kyun pe karenge? Kashmir pe aap kya baat karoge? Kushal ji bataiye. Will it give Kashmir? Can't give. It's not possible. No government can afford to do that. So, baat wo bhi jo unhone liya hai na. They have taken objection. So that's where now I think certain section has started talking that baat karna to PUK pe karo. Let's talk on PUK. And then let's do some give and take. Maybe, you know, there at least there will be some hope of that. And the third part is, of course, you know, the mindset. Their mindset is absolutely, you know, they have not yet come out of their, you know, Islamist supremacist, you know. I remember reading, you know, Rajiv Dogra's book, his beautiful book, where, you know, where borders bleed. And he mentions a very, very beautiful anecdote about a Pakistani minister. Jinse unke koi ek jaane wale usse poochte hain ki acha bataiye aapki do khwahishe kya hain. And this gentleman, in a very, you know, very grandiose manner, takes out his both hands and says, you know, in one hand, I want atom bomb in both my hands, and I want to drop one on New Delhi and another in Bombay. Now, how can you talk to these people? So there is we have to accept that, you know, that yes, you can't say neighbors, but then we also need to remember what Kautilya said: "In the neighbors necessarily won't be your friend." That's Cinderella theory. Neighbors never can be friend. So let's use to that. Neighbors बदल नहीं सकते हैं, but they are neighbors on content to correct them. And like you know, we always do that. Most of neighbors fight. I mean, very rarely it happens that the neighbors are very good friendly terms. So we have to contain them. But it will happen. Things will change. The moment we'll contain China. It all now depends on that. China is the big, big thing. The day we manage to deal with the dragon, these people are a small prize. They understand. Look, you know, they talk about Islam day in and day out. एक बार इन्होंने सिंसियांग के का इशू उठाया है चाइना से, उठाएंगे नहीं, चाइना उनको भुर्ता बना देगा, because they know, so they still, but right now China has realized it started happening that between them and India there is a huge gap, and gap is widening. The moment their only hope is China right now, यार चाइना आ जाएगा हमारे पास. I think that's the real challenge for Indian diplomacy next 20 years, 30 years, how to deal with the dragon.
Now I want to focus on, maybe this could be the segment where we spend some time, because I think this is very important for India's future. Not only how we deal with China, because a lot of commentary on social media at times, I think, is misunderstands both the West, and the West misunderstands us. I have a unique life where now I stay 4 or 5 months outside India. I stay in the West, especially America and Canada. I meet a lot of people over there, even inside, their political circles or diplomatic circles or think tank circles. And I have noticed the people often talk about Orientalism. People don't understand that if they don't understand us, we also don't understand them. There is a lot of Occidentalism also that complements their Orientalism. Like, it's just mind-blowing. And if we want a better future for humanity, I think the ideal state is the West and India working together. And it creates a great kind of a bulwark against a rising China, which by all means and measurements is an illiberal society and non-plural society, which I at least have no shame in saying. But obviously, the Indian Communist Party might disagree with me, but then they are the Indian Communist Party. So my question is, how do we look at the West now? Because every time some journal comes out and says something about us, every time somebody somewhere in the world says something about us, the reaction from India are, I'm not talking about social media reactions only, but how should India look at the West and vice versa?
I think it's a very valid question. And I agree with you that come what, India and West have to come together for the larger global good. There is no other way out. There is no other way out. We have to find a way out of the solution for whatever differences we have. But we'll have the differences. See, that part I wrote in my book also, India and the West can be friends, if not frenemies. But they cannot realize. There are a lot of basic differences the way they look. Look at what they did with Ukraine. Completely unnecessary war. And if you look at a rational point of view, with a simple understanding about Russia, this Americans would have co-opted Putin into their scheme of things. Putin was very much willing to be part of the Western order. Bill Clinton is on record saying that in his own interview, that he was very keen in the early 2000s to be part of that Western world. But the American deep state, American currency, and of course, there is armament, this thing is there. They completely blown away that opportunity. And today, look what happened. Today, this is the best case scenario for China in that given circumstances. The country which could have been the enemy or the ally of the West is sitting on the lap of Xi Jinping. So this is how the West operates. West somehow is yet to understand what you often call in your satrubodh. Usko satrubodh West ko bhi nahi hua, hame bhi nahi hai. We also make the similar mistakes. West mein bhi satrubodh ka bahut abhav hai. They don't know who their enemy is. Their real enemy is not Putin today. The real enemy is Xi Jinping. sitting quietly and changing the world and making his completely. In fact, I was reading a hundred year war with China, this by one of the authors, and he said how they have completely, you know, hijacked institutions with Chinese money. American institutions work for China. It's the state of affairs, not just Hollywood, but our China. How I mean, or seek the help of China to save the world. It's not. Hollywood se bahar ja chuka hai. They have completely penetrated into academia. All the newspapers now seek the Chinese money. So, and that's where the problem is. Like, if you leave it to just by administration, they will want to have a good relations with us. But there are many small players promoted and pushed by Chinese forces and other forces who are playing the spoilers. Look, for instance, when Modi was given the state invitation, chief in the United States, all the newspapers from NYT, Washington Post, all this came out with a scathing editorial saying that they're back for democracy. And largest democracy and oldest democracy meeting together. And these so-called liberal papers find it a setback for democracy. Why? Because the money is coming from the illiberal source. So that's where the challenge is. And that's the challenge with the liberal society, I say. It's very easy to penetrate. India mein waisa ho raha hai. It's very easy to penetrate. You know, because people, you know, you need to throw the horse. And despite that, I believe India and the West will have to come together. And that, I think, largely understanding on the government level is there. You see, even this Americans talked rubbish on Kejriwal issue. They sat together. They didn't behave as aggressively as they behaved with German ambassador. But and they try to sort out. So that understanding is there, but this thing happened, you know, because it hota hai, ghar mein do aurte hoti hai, thoda khatpat hota hai, wo hoga. That the larger enemy is China. That understanding is going by the day. And I wish that understanding happened. Well, we just can't let China go away with that and we completely, you know, squander the chance. But that's a challenge. That's a challenge about global diplomacy for next 20 years at least.
How do you think the current government has managed this? Do you think they have done a decent job, or do you think we have a long way to go in managing this entire issue? No, so what I was saying is, as far as this foreign policy conundrum is concerned, how do you think we have to deal with it? Like, do you think the government has done a good job as of now, decent job, or we have a long way to go? Like, that's what I was trying to understand.
I think it's a long way. Yeah, you're definitely, you know, China is something that is going to stay. Though I personally believe that China is not as strong as it appears. That's the case with most dictatorial states, authoritarian states. They appear to be more powerful than they actually are. Look what happened with USSR, for instance. Just in one fine day, just disintegrated. China internal reports which suggest they are not good. They are definitely not good. And I will want to believe that China is much weaker than what it appears. But for a country like India, we just can't get into the sense of complacency. We have to believe that China is as strong as it is today, and we have to accordingly. And the good part is that's why I believe that, you know, on that front, at least this government is doing well. Its focus is there, where it's due. It's making the infrastructure, roads, and everything to the northeast, or where it's case with, you know, Ladakh, all the places. So it is making the fundamental thing where it realizes who the enemy will be next 5 years or 10 years down the line. And it can come earlier than that also. China, it's already part of us. But the thing is, yeah, I think we have to, as you said in a while back, that we have to have that coalition of democracy together, where India and the West can come together. It's very difficult. Europe is already, half the Europe is already, you know, dying to be part of Chinese, you know, this thing. Definitely India and America have been there. And I think that larger consensus is there that we need to work together to deal with the tiger. And other countries can also be. That's why I put, you know, in my book, I put about Japan also. Like, we have to create that coalition against China, where Japan is there, Australia is there, India is there, America definitely is there. So maybe, I don't know about France, but yeah, I'm saying that we have to create kind of strong coalition, where we can at least put some focus and some pressure on China. And but I believe that China, the moment, you know, the way we are growing up right now, China will try to do more internal disturbances in the country right now. But it believes that this is the time it can do. The moment India likes a 15 trillion or 12 trillion economy, it becomes very difficult. It becomes a bit too big to contain, kind of thing. So that's why you'll see a lot of, you know, things like, you know, Chinese forces are there, the LSE, they're changing the name of the Tibetan cities and towns. So these are kind of things where, you know, they want to, they also believe that, you know, this is a time where you can do something with India. Tomorrow, maybe you'll not get that chance. So, yeah. So that's why I think it's an interesting time. It's a difficult time. But then, yeah, that's why good leaders are made for.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's going to be, we have to be very careful. I don't like the dismissive attitude or the gung-ho attitude. It has to be a horses for courses approach. The Western media is one world of its own. Like the amount of negative publicity that India gets in the Western media, and then the Western government, the Western state apparatus and the Western media apparatus are two different worlds of its own. Like if you read the American media or if you read BBC and many others and the way they are covering India, it's there was a study. In fact, I had shown that study in one of my monologues, which actually mapped some of these media outlets, and they said that their coverage of India is overwhelmingly negative. And the reason is that that just gets clicks. It's almost as if, yeah, you know, a new coping mechanism for the West, that chalo inse to acche hum, kind of a weird situation. Like they're coping through that. And I think that is going to create serious problems in our relationship with the West. And but let's see whatever. But Utpal, it was an absolute pleasure to read your book. I think you've done a fantastic job in covering a lot of these contemporary issues, and you've referenced all of those things well, which was one heartening thing. Your referencing in the book was very good. There are a copious number of references which one can go and verify. I mean at least people who want to can verify. But so I wish you all the best, and looking forward to your next book whenever it comes out.
Thank you Kusalji.
So, all right, guys.
Thank you very much. So coming from you, I think it's a huge compliment, because I know that you are one person who cover from cover. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So, guys, we will wrap today's discussion up. But before we wrap it up, once again, I want to remind everyone, you can go and check the description of the podcast, and you'll see all the social media details as well as the link to buy the book. So I will encourage all of you to go click the link and buy the book, and you can let Utpal know your views on the book. At the same time, if you want to support the Charvak podcast, you know the drill. You have to like, subscribe, you know the routine. I mean, if you're an audio listener, leave a rating on the audio platform. And if you really want to go to the next level, do think about joining the membership program of the Charvak podcast. And that way this podcast remains ad-free, which it has. And if you keep on doing that, it helps me to take even more heterodox views and risks as far as content creation is concerned, which is kind of a taboo in India these days. You know, you can't, if you are a right-wing branded, then you should not talk to the left. If you're left-wing branded, you should not talk to the right. It's just an absurd way that people function. And I don't believe that. I will talk to anyone and everyone I find interesting, which is why I talk to a multitude of people on this podcast. I have people from all walks of life. So if you can, do support the membership program, whether on YouTube, Patreon, Fanmo, wherever, and do buy this book. I'll see you guys next time. Until then, namaste. Take care. Bye-bye.